Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. It's great to be able to speak with you once again, and I've got, as I always say, another powerful, powerful show lined up for you. As you know, once a month I have a special, special guest on who's a regular, and we're very fortunate enough to have her on. And I'm chuckling because I actually, you know, I normally start off the show by reading my guest's bio, and today I wasn't able to print the bio out because I ran out of paper, so I actually had to write it. And when I wrote it, just hand wrote it, I was just like really, really blown away because it just really made me, you have to focus when you're writing, right? You have to write every letter. You're not skipping letters, right, or words, so you really even focus more. And I was just blown away by all that my guest has accomplished in her her career as a healer, a holistic health consultant. So I'm going to read the bio again, okay? And I want everybody to really pay attention because it blew me away when I read it, when I didn't write it. But after having handwritten it, I mean, it just really, really made me hone in and just really brought my attention and focus to all of her fabulous accomplishments since she's jumped on the holistic health path, not to mention what she's achieved prior to even becoming a holistic health consultant. But in case you didn't know by now, my special guest is Dr. Ruby Lathan. She's a certified holistic nutritionist and advocate for plant-based nutrition. Dr. Ruby inspires with a powerful story of recovering from thyroid cancer through alternative treatment focused on a whole foods plant-based diet. Dr. Ruby worked as a researcher and an award-winning engineer and now teaches others how to re-engineer their health and live disease-free. Dr. Lathan, a graduate of the University of Alabama, served as nutrition policy manager at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, where she developed and led a national grassroots campaign to advocate legislation for more healthful plant-based meal options in the national school lunch program. She's also host of the Veggie Chest, and that is a plant-based cooking show. And through her organization, Roadmap to Holistic Health, Dr. Lathan has a number of health conferences and workshops and vegan cooking classes and provides customized nutrition consultations as well. I mean, let me just say first, wow. When I read this again after having handwritten it, it really is clear to me that Dr. Lathan, first, welcome to Jawanza for Life, but it really occurred to me that you really started a whole nother career after your engineering career and after your recovering from thyroid cancer by virtue of changing your diet and adopting a plant-based nutrition plan. You really started a whole nother career, and it seemed to be just as successful as the one that you had prior.
Yeah, I did. I definitely did start a whole new career. And that was, you know, kind of feeling my way through that it's been really, you know, a great change to do so. So absolutely, it was definitely something completely different, and I'm very happy with it, and it's been a great, great change.
You know what's interesting, Dr. Lathan, when I look at your bio, again, having, you know, your background in engineering and then having started a whole new career and then having risen to the level of serving as the nutrition policy manager at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, where you developed and led a national grassroots campaign to advocate legislature for more healthful plant-based meal options in the national school lunch program. That's amazing to me because a lot of people, when they change their lifestyle and make the changes that are necessary to heal, they don't necessarily go on and just do the things that you did. I mean, could you talk about that for a moment, just that part of your journey where you actually you know, got with the, I mean, you took this seriously. You took this and ran with it. I mean, you took your healing and said, you know what, I'm going to help other people in any way that I can, and this is one of the ways that I'm going to do that. Could you talk about that part of the journey when you actually served as nutrition policy manager for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine?
Sure. That was definitely an experience. You know, it was one of those things that I think that was just meant to be, because I found out the position while I was still in Albuquerque, and I had decided, you know, I was going to move to D.C. And find the right fit for me. And so when I found that position, I was like, oh, okay, this is one of those things that looks like it has my name written all over it. Because it just, everything that was described was what I was feeling, you know, having a passion about plant-based diets and healing, having a knowledge about it, you know, having lived it, especially having a really strong knowledge about it, having been studying it the year to before to heal myself. You know, I was well-versed in the power of plant-based diets. That was really one of the requirements, wanting somebody who was committed and passionate about it and was also interested in public service and activism. So I was like, well, this is absolutely perfect for me. I haven't done anything quite like this before, but I've had experiences, life experiences, and I've petitioned organizations and things to get things done, so I think I can transfer my skill set to this position. And they felt the same way, so I just, you know, jumped right in. And, you know, it was a little scary, you know, not having, you know, lobbied Congress before and putting together a national campaign. But, you know, I had a lot of support, and it was kind of learn as you go, and I met a lot of dedicated people who were really dedicated to helping people heal, helping people to live well, and also really dedicated to stopping animal abuse as well. And so, and when you put all those things together, it all makes sense, and you just have some really dedicated folks. But I learned a lot about our food system and how it works, how our school lunch program works and how our schools work, and how to affect that change, which isn't easy by any stretch of the imagination. Because when you're looking at changing something that is, you know, profiting a certain segment of the population unfairly, you know, because they're feeding our kids cheap leftover meat, basically, mm-hmm. and you're trying to go up against that, it's a lot. But, you know, you just have to have that. You can't be daunted and scared. You just do what you have to do and know that there are enough people out there who feel the same way, that things need to change, and the change starts with us. So it was definitely an uphill battle, because you have lots of people who are just uneducated about how unhealthy school lunches are in some schools are, and how unhealthy it is to be feeding our kids processed meat several times a day or a week. So it was about, you know, finding those support folks who were you know, believed in that, and then mobilizing people all over the country. So it was a big, big task, I have to say, but had a lot of help finding folks who were willing to speak up and lobby their congressmen and rally other people around and get signatures, over 100,000 signatures, to help pass a bill that we ultimately did not get passed, but we got it introduced, which was huge, because our bill was about, you know, incorporating plant-based options in the school lunch program. So I wasn't even saying we're going to take away your meat. We're just saying, mm-hmm. you know, children deserve to have healthy plant-based options in the lunch program pretty much all the time. And so mm-hmm. that should be a no-brainer. But when you're up against, you know, big agriculture and the meat industry, it's not such an easy sell, because people don't want to see their districts, their share, be cut. You know, if their district is a big dairy producer, then they're not necessarily going to want to jump on board with something that promotes plant-based diets. So we had to navigate all those little nuances to try to find the right folks and congresspeople who would support it and introduce the bill. And so that was a process in and of itself, but we found those folks and, you know, we pushed it through, and ultimately, you know, getting a bill introduces a big deal. Getting it passed is even bigger. As you can see, Congress doesn't do a lot sometimes. So we were able to influence the next bill, the lunch program bill, but just, you know, raising the awareness was huge. And not only that, we helped a lot of schools introduce plant-based options on their own without the legislation because they have the power to do that. And so it was, you know, it was more than just the legislation. It was also getting schools to acknowledge and develop recipes and things that they could use and help them introduce it to the schools. And, you know, the kids love it. It's really about getting the folks who are buying the food and preparing the food on board with it. So it was a long process but rewarding, and we made a big impact, you know. And it's something that I know PCRM is continuing to battle, Physicians Committee for Responsible Ed, to continue to push that agenda to, you know, give kids options, you know, at the very least, for something healthy.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is that, as you mentioned, that you weren't even talking about taking the meat off the plate, even though, of course, I know that would have been ideal, but, you know, that's
right.
Not even what trying to introduce, and just having the plant-based nutrition as an option, I mean,
mm-hmm.
even that still would have given the kids a choice. I mean, it
right.
doesn't guarantee, and the likelihood of every child just going vegan or vegetarian is probably not, you know, that great. I mean, you know, just the likelihood, but it, just the option, they wouldn't even allow. Well, let me ask you this. When they struck down the bill, what was the, did they give a reason for, I mean, I know we know that, like you mentioned, that the, you know, if they're in the dairy producing states and, you know, the real reason, but did they give any reason at all?
Some gave those reasons were pretty upfront that they couldn't support something that would cut into their share. So, you know, cheese and dairy states were, some of their folks were like, nope, because of that express factor. Others just didn't feel that it was important enough to sign on, you know, because basically the process is, you get someone to, if you get a congressperson, if you're starting in the House, of course, you get a congressperson to, you know, introduce the bill, and then you get either co-sponsors of the bill or people to sign on to the bill so that you have enough support so that if and when it does go to the floor, it will pass. If you don't have enough support, generally it's not going to go to the floor to begin with because there's no point in,
right.
you know, taking a bill that far. So it didn't, you know, didn't garner enough support. And for those who didn't, it was just not something that they wanted to sponsor. That was just simple as that. They often didn't say why. They would just say, sure, we'll take it under consideration, and then that's it. So, you know, for a variety, I guess for reasons thinking that, you know, school lunches are fine as they are, or that, you know, schools should take this up on their own or something like that. But really what you need is more, you know, funding for the school lunches too, which is another issue because the meat is so cheap because it's, you know, already subsidized by the government, you know, that they are able to get it at a very cheap rate. And so when you're trying to replace it with something a little healthier, you know, there's a cost associated with it. So that was, for some people, they're not willing to raise the cost of school lunches from the dollar that they're funding it by another 50 cents or whatever it is so that kids can have decent food. I mean, oftentimes the school isn't spending more than $1 to $2 per lunch to feed people. And so you think about what can you actually put on the plate for that cheap? It's going to be pretty low quality. So, you know, the finances of it can be an issue. And so we were also working to help introduce low-cost plant-based options that were bean-based, so, you know, they're just as cheap as meat, but we're making, you know, things out of beans that are very healthy for kids, too. So they have those options. So it was a lot of challenges to work with such a tiny budget for a lot of the schools who wanted to do some healthier things. It was really challenging, you know, just trying to fit those in with the tiny amount of money that is dedicated to that. So, yeah, there's always a reason whether it's told or untold. You know, it's politics. So they're not always that forthcoming with why not. Yeah.
And they obviously weren't making the correlation either between learning and diet either, obviously.
No, no, they weren't. And that is one of the tests that we were wanting to do was to have a school go on a completely plant-based diet and compare the scores and academics before and after. And we were pretty close to getting a school to do that. It was just, it's just very difficult. A lot of different things you have to do to get that in line. But we're pretty confident that the scores would tell the story, because other schools have switched to plant-based have had a lot less behavioral problems and other issues when they have switched to a plant-based diet. So, and hopefully when they're doing that switch, they're also switching to a healthier diet overall, meaning less sugar and things like that, when they're trying to implement healthier options. So that, you know, that if that study is done, I'm sure it will tell its own story. But you have a lot of opposition to things like that. There was even opposition to Meatless Mondays. You know, we had some parents are all in a huff about, why are we having a meatless? It's one day of a kid not having meat, but having something just as more nutritious for them. But you have some people who are upset about that. So it's it was an educational thing. So we had to educate on many levels. We had to educate the schools, the administration, and then you have the folks who actually prepare the food. They have to be educated and bought into making changes, because a lot of the food is just heat and serve. So a lot of schools, they don't cook food for their kids. They just have some other company come in and bring prepackaged things that they just stick in an oven and heat, and literally that's it. So there's no cooking going on in the kitchen. So then when you say, okay, you're going to now need to prepare some food, that's not going to roll. So that's an issue with a lot of schools that are doing that. So we have to educate, you know, administration, the preparers of the food, the school lunch folks, and then the parents, and then the kids. So, and of course, the kids were the easiest, but it was, you know, you had to get these four layers of people all on board just to introduce a veggie burger to a school. So you would think it's easy, but it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, you know, and finding those champions at those different schools, people on the school board and things like that who could help, you know, push things forward to let, you know, this isn't a takeover. This is a healthy option. It's going to be okay. It's all good, you know. So it's challenging. It's amazing how people are so connected to meat that they can sometimes be extremely resistant to something as benign as a veggie burger. So, yeah, it was a process.
Well, I commend you. I really commend you for it, because I know that when it comes to sharing information about holistic health, especially when you're talking about vegan and vegetarian, taking away people's meat, taking away what people have grown up on, you know, you're going to get some serious resistance, even if you've produced statistics. You might show them studies or refer them to studies that actually show the benefit of it. People, they hear it, and it goes in one ear and out the other, you know. So I really commend you, because you have taken on a very tough ministry, I'll even call it, you know, just to go out here and educate people about the benefits of plant-based nutrition, and even showing them how to do it, walking them through it with the veggie test, and we'll talk a bit more about that later. But I just want to take a moment just to thank you for all of the work that you do, and to commend you because, you know, we need champions, more champions like yourself out here in the trenches and doing it and, you know, you're putting on workshops and lectures and so forth. And it's very much needed. And, you know, you are helping to make a change. And sometimes we might not see that dent that we're making, like shows like this. We have no idea who's going to listen to this show today and who's going to make changes as a result of listening to it. So I feel honored to have you as my special guest on a regular basis. So to help you get that word out, because it's definitely needed. Thank you so much. Everybody, tonight we're going to be talking about, as a theme, a topic, heart disease, the number one cause of death in women. Again, heart disease, the number one cause of death in women. You know, that's kind of a shocking thing to me, because I would have thought, for whatever reason, I would have thought maybe breast cancer or something, but, you know, heart disease, the number one cause of death in women, that's interesting. So that's very specific, too. So what is it, I would ask Dr. Lathan, about heart disease that's such an issue for women? Because I know it's an issue for men, but not so much as women.
Right. I mean, it's an issue for both. It's just that it's overlooked in women. For whatever reason, it's more associated with men. And so we often are overlooked in general, that, you know, when women are having symptoms of a heart attack, it's often not even picked up about, you know, about that this is what's happening, because it's such a disease that is associated with men. So it's actually, you know, the leading cause of death, period. However, it's very high in women. And and the thing is, when you think heart attack, we often, you know, it's just so that it's so heavily associated with men, it often gets overlooked, and women aren't paying attention to the signs, the symptoms, and the cause. And so it's something that we need to highlight. It's the number one cause of death, period. But it's also taking out women way more. And so it's one of those things that we need to address, and address, you know, now, because oftentimes with heart disease, you don't get a warning like you do with other diseases. You don't get, you know, symptoms. Oftentimes the first symptom of heart disease is a massive heart attack that results in death. So you don't get, you know, three or four chances. You don't get to say, oh, what am I going to do about this heart disease? Am I going to have surgery or not? You don't even get that option. You just die. And that's why this is such a critical issue, because, you know, we think about things like breast cancer and things like that we associate with women, and everybody knows about it, but we just ignore our hearts way too much. And that's why we need to bring out this fact, because women are taking the hit, and and it's not something that's being recognized. As, you know, folks need to wake up and realize this is serious, and, you know, we need to pay attention to it and take preventative steps, because you might not have that opportunity, as with other diseases, to actually do something about it. You know, it's too late. And I know several people who've, you know, died from a heart attack. Usually, and what's brought this up to the forefront, I mean, it's killing, especially, you know, African-American women too, but African-American men, it's like every month there's somebody, I don't know if you're into hip-hop, but every month there seems to be a new person in their 40s, a hip-hop person who has died, and I always know it's a heart disease. Before I even read the article, I said, what's the chances? And boom, it's always heart trouble, heart disease, congestive heart failure. He had heart issues. It's taking folks out in the droves, and it's taking folks out younger and younger. It's, you know, usually it was a little bit later in the 60s. You know, when you're hit 60, 70, you hear more about the heart disease. Now it's, It's mid-40s, and it's just taking people out with no warning. And so that's why it's something we need to talk about.
Well, if we could, then let's talk about, you said something very important. Let's talk about risk factors then, because you mentioned that if the first symptom could be sudden death, because you don't get that, you know, like you mentioned, 3 and 4, let me, and, you know, decide if I'm going to, you know, do it holistically, if I'm going to treat this, you know, allopathically or holistically. You don't get that, you know, because you're at the funeral, you know, and they're looking down at you, you know. So then let's talk about risk factors that could contribute if there aren't any real symptoms. What are some of the risk factors that you would associate with heart disease, heart trouble? Because you mentioned the hip hop artist that you can just tell right off the bat that so and so, you know, died of a heart attack. You kind of know that there must have been something. Even if it was sudden, there had to be a certain lifestyle. They might have been obese, and even in hip hop, as a matter of fact, I remember. Now, Biggie, of course, didn't die of a heart attack, but I think Big Pun, who was a rapper, did.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others who have died of heart attacks or whatever.
Yeah.
But obesity, let's talk about that for a second, because at one point, obesity was starting to become celebrated. I mean, it's like people went from being
yeah,
big.
Yeah, especially among the rap community of men, right? Everybody's big something. I think the guy who died last week was Big Black. This is what they called him, but I can't remember his actual name. But, the first day, you know, they didn't have the cause of death. But I was like, he's 45, unexplained death. Usually it's heart disease. That I always know. When they don't know the cause of death right off, it's if it's sudden, unexpected death, nine mm-hmm. times out of ten, for me, that when I've guessed, it's been right, but it's been heart disease. Because most other diseases give you some type of a warning, you know, in advance. So for heart disease, you know, the risk factors are going to be, you know, some of the things that are risk factors for other things. So it's going to be having an unhealthy diet. So, and we can talk about what that means for sure, but high blood pressure, having diabetes or being pre-diabetic are risk factors. Smoking is definitely a risk factor. Obesity, as you've mentioned, or just being overweight. You don't have to be obese. Just being overweight is also a risk factor. Inactivity is a risk factor, which is why a lot of people die in the winter shoveling snow, because they're very inactive, and then they get out there and start shoveling snow and don't realize how hot it is because, you know, it's so cold. So they're just shoveling away, never worked out in 3 months, and boom, 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 and then they have a heart attack. That happens every winter. So being inactive and then suddenly being active, but just being inactive is a risk factor. When I was shoveling snow last winter, I was like, okay, I think I'm good. I haven't worked out. I'm not going to like it, because it gets pretty intense, you know, with those heavy shovels of stuff. It's just one of those workouts that sneaks up on you. But I was cognizant of it. I was like, okay, I'm sweating a lot, even though I don't feel it hot. I know that I'm sweating a lot, so let me take a break. But anyway, so inactivity is huge. High blood pressure, high cholesterol. So if you have diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol, you're hitting 3 of like 10 of the top risk factors right there. Being older is considered a risk factor. You know, usually it takes time. So the age around 55 and older is starting to be a risk factor. But that's a risk factor, to me, contingent upon these other things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, inactivity. Just simply being, you know, 65 doesn't make you at risk for a heart disease, but unless you fit these other categories. You know, having these problems and then getting pregnant or having preeclampsia during pregnancy for women is another thing. So that's, you know, having high blood pressure and things during pregnancy is a risk factor. And then they also cite, you know, family history of disease. But we know that that's not necessarily a big factor if you're not doing what your family has done.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of diet and lifestyle, in terms of family history. So those are the risk factors. Now, there are some symptoms of that also go along with it as well. Some of those would be, you know, chest pain. And again, the symptoms are often so short term that it's too late. So
mm-hmm.
you have chest pain and then you die for some people. Some people have more of a chronic chest pain or shortness of breath, you know, pain in the arm, pain in the back. A lot of times that's not, you know, kind of a sharp pain in the back or numbness in one of your arms suddenly. Those are all symptoms of poor blood flow. So because a heart attack is basically your arteries are clogged to the point where blood cannot get through, and then you have a heart attack. So that could also lead to a stroke as well. And sometimes those two things go together, you know, stroke and a heart attack, and one before the other or at the same time. So if you have a stroke, you know, you're probably also at high risk for a heart attack too. So it's kind of angina, as they call it, the pain that's also, it kind of starts in the chest and then it spreads to your arms and maybe your neck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a symptom. And some people have that repeatedly before they actually have a heart attack. So that is an indicator that you have heart disease. So, it can be, you know, just intense, localized pain somewhere, whether it's your back, your upper abdomen, a shoulder. Those can often be symptoms. So those are the kind of things that need to be checked out. And then feeling just usually when you have this kind of chest pain, you're also feeling out of breath. And you might have a sharp pain too. So that you're kind of lucky if you have that symptom before an actual heart attack, because that means, you know, there might be time to do something about it. And so those are symptoms. I mean, it can range from nausea, vomiting, you know, those type of things that could go along. For women, a lot of times those things accompany angina. They'll get out of breath, feel nauseated, more pain in the abdomen area, sharp chest pain, and vomiting. So you wouldn't normally think that that's a symptom of heart disease, but it is. And those are symptoms that women tend to have more of than men, whereas men more have the chest pain. They don't necessarily have the nausea and vomiting as often as women do. So that's something that we have to really, you know, be aware of, that we need to recognize those symptoms, but we really want to be in the area of prevention. But anytime you have heart, chest pain, we really want to check it out and not ignore it. And the other thing, you know, why I thought this was a good topic, it's because the statistics say that nearly half of African American women have heart disease. Half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's not only the number one killer in the United States of women, and it's half. So that's a lot, you know. And I've had friends die from heart disease pretty young, and you know, the first time I just remember she's such a wonderful woman, and she played organ all the time, and it was a pretty young lady, and she had a heart attack, and, you know, they caught it the first time. She got to the hospital, had the chest pain, and went and had, you know, surgery, and they cleared it out and patched her back up. And then afterwards, you know, I noticed, you know, one of her things was, for her own comfort, she would have a bowl of ice cream every night, she told me. Because I didn't know, you know, what her dietary habits were. And this was right before, you know, I embarked on my health journey. So, but I knew having a bowl of ice cream every night before bed was not something you want to do for someone who's survived a heart attack. But she was like, I just like doing it. It tastes my comfort thing, and that's what I do. And then a couple years later, she had another one and was gone. This time they didn't catch it in time. And so it was very sad. And so, you know, we can spend the next half of the rest of the show, we can talk a little bit about, you know, how we can prevent this. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, her having had a heart attack, there's a lot she could have done to reduce the risk of a second heart attack. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, that, you know, just because they cleared things out and pulled out some plaque the first time or propped you up with a stent does not mean you're in the clear by any stretch of the imagination. It means that you need to do something drastically different than what you've been doing, or it's just a matter of time before that artery is clogged again somewhere else. And so that's really, you know, that she didn't get that message, you know, that, you know, hey, we got to do something here. We want you to stay around a lot longer. So that's one of the things. So, and then we, you know, obviously when we talk about poor diet, there are specific dietary patterns that raise your risk dramatically for heart disease than other diets. So we can definitely talk about that.
You know what's interesting, Doctor, is that, for example, you take the young lady who you mentioned who would eat the bowl of ice cream every night before dinner or after dinner or for comfort before she went to bed, and then you might take somebody else who, you know, they are experiencing some of the signs, you know, the chest pains, the shortness of breath and all of that, but because they don't know and they haven't heard this information, they might, you know, somebody could call them and be like, so what's going on, man? Oh, man, I just had to sit down for a minute, man. My chest was hurting. So what you getting ready to do now, man? Getting ready to cook some dinner, man. Going to make me a grilled cheese sandwich and get a bowl of milk, you know what I mean? Or a glass of milk.
A bowl of milk, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
not even make
Some of those symptoms are just what you said, lightheadedness, dizziness, and that's because the blood flow isn't happening, fainting or almost fainting, you know, having a racing heartbeat or a slow heartbeat. It's like any of those things, not having enough energy to get to the couch to sit, barely making it to sit down. All of those things are symptoms. And yes, and then
you know
we'll go
and... I was just going to say, you know what's interesting too? For a lot of people, the symptoms become normal. You know, they get used to walking slow. You know, they get used to not being able to bend over and tie their shoes or, you know.
Right,
just,
having that shortness of breath. A lot of people do have that shortness of breath and just think, oh, it's just I'm overweight. So not really realizing, yes, it is because you're overweight, but you also have heart disease. You know, they don't know that. Absolutely. Yeah, we do get... Some people do just live with feeling lightheaded from time to time, feeling dizzy from time to time, having that chest pain and then it going away, all symptoms.
You know, I know I want to get into, you know, talking with you about the ways of combating heart disease, but I just wanted to share this because we're having this discussion. I actually know a guy that has had 4 heart attacks. He's obese. But he's actually been fortunate enough to survive 4 heart attacks, but he won't listen to me when I tell him about holistic health, because he likes to eat. I mean, he's a big dude. I mean, he, you know, really overweight. He shortness of breath, you know, has trouble bending over tying his shoes, all of that. But he's had 4 heart attacks. And each time, I keep telling him, man, the next one, you know, if there's a next one, you know, you might not get to have 6. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, so it's amazing that doesn't produce some type of a call to action to have that. You know, I mean, by the time I had 3, I'd be like, okay, it's time to make a change so I don't have 4. You know?
Right.
But oftentimes, you know, they're not given enough instruction to say, you know, you need to do X, Y, and Z, which is why we have to take our health in our own hands and not just rely on a doctor to tell us what to do, because common sense should tell you, I need to do something different because I wasn't just born to have heart disease. This just didn't happen because heart disease was floating around and caught me. It's not how it happens. So, I mean, there are some genetic issues with heart disease, but very low. Most of the population, less than 10%, is going to have a genetic heart issues, heart failures or problems. So the majority, over 90% of us who have, or 90% of folks who have heart disease, it's a diet and lifestyle issue, and it is not, oh, because someone in your family had it. So there are those people who have, you know, heart arrhythmias and other things because of a genetic defect or something, but that's very low. So we're even those can be helped, but we're talking about the 90%+ of the population that is diet and lifestyle related. And there are two other things, too, that I didn't mention. Poor dental hygiene is also a risk factor because some heart disease is brought on by bacterial infection and inflammation. And so when you have gingivitis and other very poor dental health and bleeding of the gums and all of this, that actually, that bacteria makes its way down to the heart and can cause heart disease and heart infections. So having poor dental hygiene is definitely a contributor as well. And I know a lot of folks don't realize that, and you know, they'll wait till the last to get dental work done, or, you know, don't have the good habits of flossing every day and, you know, brushing and tongue scraping and all the things that we need to be doing to keep our teeth in our mouth so we don't have to get all these implants and things like that. Those same things, you know, help keep heart disease away as well. And then lastly, stress, especially long-term stress, which, you know, could account for why it's such an issue among women, because we tend to carry a little bit more stress long-term without doing something about it. So this unrelieved stress actually damages the arteries. You know, acute stress damages, you know, can bring on a heart attack. You know, people who have heart disease that don't know that they have it, it can be brought on by smoke. You know, a lot of people, heart disease, heart attacks tended to go down when they stopped having smoking in restaurants because people didn't realize that, you know, if you're close to having a heart attack and don't know it, again, it's one of those things that the first symptom is a heart attack, so you're sitting there and then you get a face full of smoke, it often brings on a heart attack. Eating just one more high cholesterol meal actually brings on a heart, can bring on a heart attack. So those triggers, you know, by then it's been building, but there are, you know, having being, you know, you have seriously clogged arteries very close to a heart attack, then having a very high stress situation prolonged can bring on the heart attack. So at that point, you know, things have been building, but we, you know, those are things that can trigger it when it's already there. So,
you know, I would imagine then, Doc, that that they have found, I'm sure they've done studies and found that people in general, but I'm sure they've probably done studies with women in particular, that meditate probably have fewer incidences of heart attack just simply because of the reduction or the elimination of stress.
Absolutely. Meditation has been shown to reduce blood pressure and a lot of other things. And generally, since, you know, having high blood pressure is one of those risk factors, it's also been shown to help reduce cholesterol and other things. It definitely lowers the risk of heart attack, especially from the stress standpoint, but improving overall health in general because, you know, it actually damages the cells, you know, when we're under a high-stress environment. So doing the opposite of that is definitely one thing that will help prevent a heart attack.
Now, let's talk about cayenne pepper for a moment, because I religiously take it. I put it on everything, you know, simply just because I've read that cayenne pepper can actually stop a heart attack in like a minute or so, or a couple of minutes, or something that they advise you if you run in any holistic health circles, that, you know, if you find yourself having a heart attack, or, you know, then grab some cayenne pepper, drink it, you know, ingest it, and you should be good. Now, we've been talking about heart attack, but heart disease in general, you could have a heart disease. Many people might be currently listening to this show and have heart disease, but have never had a heart attack. Well, first, let me ask you, what are your thoughts on the cayenne pepper? And if you agree with that, then would you just advise people to, you know, just include it in your diet, and you can actually, it's got so many benefits, I mean, when you read up on it, that you could actually reduce or reverse heart attack and heart disease?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I have heard about, you know, the cayenne pepper can do that. It's one of those things that helps reduce inflammation overall, but it's the actual kind of ingredient in cayenne pepper that
Absolutely.
Has been said to help, you know, stop the heart attack, you know, by, I guess, relieving the blood vessels, relaxing them, allowing the blood to go through. I don't know how much it's been corroborated, but I couldn't see how it could hurt. Definitely, if you're, you know, if you have are having a heart attack, you know, that's something that could help. But you really want to use that more as a, you know, preventative measure, along with other dietary things. So what the study shows that, you know, countries or populations that eat spicy peppers and things more often have lower rates of heart disease because it's protecting those arteries a bit more. So that alone wouldn't prevent it, but in conjunction, it would definitely help quite a bit.
Yeah, well,
so it's definitely something that you'd want to use regularly.
Yeah, I just want to make it clear to the people that are listening, I wasn't suggesting that you just walk around with some cayenne in your pocket and continue to eat chicken and dairy and then just say, well, if I have a heart attack, I'll just pop some
cayenne
in my mouth and I'll be
No, it works more over time. I mean, but some say, you know, it could stop it, you know, right away. I don't know about that. But, you know, first thing you want to do is get to a hospital as quickly as possible to minimize the damage that's being done by the heart attack. But, you know, if you have some while you're on your way, I don't see that it could necessarily hurt. But that's for folks who are conscious. So they were saying, you know, if you're able to breathe and drink while you're having these symptoms and you put some in water and drink it, then it can help, you know, ward off or help reduce some of the damage that's happening by the heart attack. Because the longer you're going without blood to certain areas, the more damage is done during a heart attack. So so that's one thing. But you really want to go toward the preventive side. So what was the other part of your question? I'm sorry.
About the heart disease, because there might be people out there that are currently have never had a heart attack, but they might have heart disease. They might have been diagnosed with, you know, congestive heart failure or you know, matter of fact, here's another one. I've heard people say that the doctor said I need to lose weight because I got too much fat around my heart. Have you heard that one before?
I have, yeah. That's definitely, I haven't heard that often, but that's an indicator of heart disease, yeah, for sure. You know, usually if you're diagnosed with heart disease where you haven't had a heart attack, because you can definitely, you know, have heart disease without having a heart attack, usually it's going to lead there at some point, or maybe. But they're going to usually put you on some type of a blood thinner or something like that so that the blood can make its way a little bit easier through these clogged arteries. It's going to, you know, put you on some kind of medication again that helps the blood to keep from clumping together so it can make its way through clogged arteries. So those are usually, they're going to definitely put you on some kind of a medication to help. Usually, you know, some people take aspirin every day to help. Again, that's all about thinning the blood generally and trying to reduce some inflammation. Those are generally the type of medications that are given once it's detected that you have actual heart disease. So, and basically they're just trying to keep your blood thin enough so that it can make its way through clogged arteries, as opposed to giving you in conjunction with, which is a good thing because that could keep you from having a heart attack tomorrow. But in conjunction with that, there needs to be some protocol to help reverse this. And the only protocol that's been shown to reverse heart disease has been a plant-based diet. And they've done lots of studies on that. The other diets that are, you know, low in cholesterol, low in saturated fat, low in these things, slow down, you know, as we've said before, it slows down the progression, but it doesn't stop it and reverse it. And so when you have been diagnosed with heart disease, that's something that's like your second chance to say, okay, I'm at high risk for a heart attack because I actually have heart disease, so, and I know it. So rather than just continuing to do what I'm doing, I need to do something to reverse it and get back on the other side and get off of the high-risk list. Because all those things that we talked about that are risk factors can be reversed, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, unhealthy diet, you know, no physical activity. You can't reverse your age, but all those things can be reversed. So if you take yourself off of the high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetic, pre-diabetic, smoking list, then you're no longer in the risk factor, which means you're probably reversing your heart disease at that point. So that's really where the emphasis should be. You know, it's just not one of those things you really want to play around with and rely on blood thinners and things like that to just keep you going when that's not a guarantee. Even that isn't a guarantee that that's going to keep you from having a heart attack, because if your blood is super thin and it's 100% blockage, I don't care how thin the blood is, it's not getting through, and there's still a heart attack on the way. So it's definitely something that has to be addressed and seriously addressed.
Let's talk about meat and dairy for a moment, because, you know, we know that there are certain things that clog the arteries. And, you know, so if we look at, well, what actually does clog the arteries, you know, because somebody might have a lot of clogged arteries and they don't know, well, how did they get clogged? What role does meat and dairy play in the hardening of arteries and clogging of arteries?
They're the main culprits, actually. So along with some unhealthy oils, those are the main factors that introduce the hardening and clogging of the artery. So looking at eating cholesterol, which you only find in meat and dairy products, so that bowl of ice cream that my friend was having every night was just cholesterol and saturated fat just reclogging the arteries every night, repeatedly. So dairy is the highest source of, you know, saturated fat and cholesterol. In addition, it has lots of sugar, which also causes inflammation, which also is going to lead toward heart disease. So those, dairy is like the worst. You know, I don't even know which is worse, meat or dairy, but it seems like dairy, because it's, people seem to think it's so innocent. Because it's, you know, it's ice cream, it's cookies, it's in cake, it's in, you know, everything that we bake, you know, we're using some kind of milk that, or heavy cream, that it just seems so not dangerous, but it really, really, really is. And it seems as though that people can see that red meat and things like that, or meat in general, are going to clog your arteries. It seems like that connection is made a lot easier than the cheese and the dairy products. So those are the things that clog the arteries, absolutely. And they have no fiber, so they don't take anything out with it. So so those are going to be the primary sources of saturated fat and cholesterol, which do contribute to heart disease, are going to be your meat and dairy products. And that's why, you know, when they did the studies, you know, a lot of times with Dean Ornish, he's a physician who did one of the studies that really brought this to the forefront of the Mediterranean diet and the plant-based diet being one of the ways to reverse it, through that study. So, you know, and so a lot of people are put on a, quote, Mediterranean diet when they have heart disease because doctors really still aren't ready to say, go on a vegan diet or a plant-based diet. They find that the Mediterranean diet sounds a lot easier. While it's helpful because you're eating a lot less meat and a lot less dairy, you're still eating some, and you're eating fish, which is still also has saturated fat and cholesterol, so it's still going to be contributing to it. Those are things that are going to definitely cause an issue. And then the vegetable oils are a problem too. The safflower, sunflower, corn oil, canola oil also cause blockages and inflammation. So if you have heart disease, you really want to go toward an oil-free plant-based diet. And I know that sounds extreme, but, you know, so is a heart attack.
Surgery.
So, yeah.
Always open heart
so
surgery,
it really
right?
is. So Caldwell Esselstyn, who said that too, I love it when he said that in the movie. He was like, yeah, people think it's extreme, but he said, I think it's extreme to crack open your chest, take a vein from your leg, take out a vein from your heart and replace it with a vein from your leg and then sew you back up. To me, that's extreme, a little bit more extreme than not eating animals and oil. You know, so, you know, generally folks we recommend kind of a low-oil plant-based diet, but if you have heart disease, you really want to go toward that oil-free plant-based diet because you don't want any oil depositing more of this inflammatory fat in your arteries. So you want to leave the oils alone. You want to leave all saturated fat and cholesterol alone. You want to eat things that have fat in them, but smaller amounts like nuts and seeds and things like that that have the right amount of fat and oil in them without added oil. So when I say oil-free, you're not like eating nothing that has oil in it, but you're eating things that have naturally occurring oil like avocados and things like that. Just smaller amounts. You get rid of sugar, you know, or at least significantly reduce the sugar to, you know, more of the complex sugars using, you know, molasses or maple syrup, things like that, but no white sugar, you know, your coconut nectar, small amounts of those type of things. You want to eat fermented foods that have lots of probiotics that help reduce inflammation. So that's going to be things like sauerkraut and kimchi and kombucha and those things that are fermented are really going to be helpful to put on your food. And, you know, having good sources of omega-3 fatty acids. So that's your chia seeds, hemp seeds, and walnuts and things like that that are really, really good for you. So, you know, you're going to want to go in that, change to that direction, not go in that direction. You need to switch to that direction if you have heart disease. If you have these symptoms and you haven't yet been diagnosed, you need to do that now as well because you don't want to get there. Because, like I said, that's why it's like heart disease is just one of those things that, it's, you know, you're here today and gone tomorrow, and there's no warning for a lot of people, and that's why it's so sad. And we just have to be aware of it and know that we can't play around with it and, you know, get our dental health in order, especially if you have bleeding gums or issues with your gums. You got to take care of that, absolutely, because that can trigger a heart attack as well. So go vegan, go healthy, get active, and eat well. You know, lose weight if that's necessary, if that's one of the things that you need to do. Reverse the diabetes, cholesterol, and high blood pressure, and, you know, start marking off these risk factors so that you're not on that list.
You know, it's amazing to me, Doctor.
Every year I speak at an event, Tim's Day in Baltimore, that I started about 2 years ago. It was a woman, her husband, another sudden death. He was family man, several kids, they're going right along in their 40s, boom, has a heart attack, had no warning, no idea he had heart disease, and he's gone. And now his wife started this awareness day to let people know. So this hits so many people, and we just don't realize it. You know, it's like it's just downplayed. Oh, we don't know the cause. We do know the cause. The cause of heart disease is very clear. It's not a mystery. We know what causes it, and we know how to get rid of it. So this shouldn't be killing us on a regular basis as it is.
You know, Doctor, it's so interesting that it can even be reversed, that heart disease can be reversed. I'm sure people will readily agree that if they change their diet that they can prevent certain things, but to know that even if you happen to have heart disease, you might be currently diagnosed with heart disease, that you can actually change your diet, change what goes into your mouth, and start the process of actually healing the heart. Correct, Doc?
Absolutely. And a lot of people know, or I'm not sure if they are aware or not, that that's why Bill Clinton had switched to primarily a vegan diet, is because he had a stent put in and, you know, has the best health care in the world, and noticed mm-hmm. that the stent was getting clogged again because he didn't change anything. And then I believe it's his daughter who's vegan, convinced him to go vegan, and he has done that because he said he wants to be around for his kids, his grandkids. He wants to live. He doesn't want to have another heart attack. Now, we all agree whether you're on whatever side of politics you're on, he's a very smart man and has access to the best. And he has recognized that, you know, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to get what I got, which was a stent, and I don't want another one. I want to live. And so that was a big reason that, you know, he's not pudgy anymore. He's not eating McDonald's anymore, and because he wants to live. And it's the same for us. You know, we don't have to wait until something happens before, you know, we do something about it. It definitely can be reversed, and pretty, you know, in relatively short order. You know, a month can start this reversal. You can start seeing reversal in that short of a time.
You know what's interesting, Doc? I know we got to close it out, but when I think about people who were not born vegetarians or born vegan, weren't, you know, they just were not born to parents that, you know, brought them up eating vegan or vegetarian, excuse me, those that do become vegan or vegetarian tend to be, and this is not against anybody that doesn't read or hasn't, you know, is not a reader, but those who do make the switch tend to be either intelligent, or they want to be intelligent, you know, and they read, because it's something that you have to make a conscious choice. You have to look at the raw data. You have to determine that, okay, based on the studies, based on the information, this is a no-brainer. But those who have, I don't even want to say don't have access to, you know, certain information, because we do live in a country where you can pretty much have access to anything. There are libraries on every corner, just about, you know. There's the internet, you know, so there's no excuse for not being able to access the information about becoming a vegetarian or a vegan. But those who do make that conscious decision tend to be those that read. You know, you're going to have to read. Would you agree? Because you're going to have to do some research. If you're not born into it and raised in it, then in order for you to make that choice, you have to get the information. You got to get the data. And hearing a show like this is the beginning that, I mean, you had to research. I mean, in order for you to change your diagnosis, you had to read, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no excuse because we have the internet and everybody's got it on their phone. So while you're waiting in line or in traffic that's stuck at a standstill, you can be reading the stuff. You have to educate yourself on this type of thing and do something about it. Absolutely. There's plenty of information on reversing heart disease. It's in books, online, even PCRM, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine that we were talking about, has lots of information on that. It's on their website as well. And so it's out there, and it doesn't have to be difficult. You can get, with support folks, and do what you need to do to live, because if you have these risk factors, it's not a joke. It's nothing to play with, because it's so sudden for many people, and that's really the sad part about it. And we really want to, keep people around and not have these sudden deaths that we just wake up to. And those types tend to be so much more devastating when people are, you think they're fine, and then the next day they're just gone. It's such a devastating thing, and that we really want to avoid those situations and do what's necessary. And not only that, you just feel better too. When you get off the risk factor list, you know how much better you're going to feel and just live better, not having shortness of breath and not being pre-diabetic or diabetic or not, carrying an extra 50 pounds around or, being inactive, all those things, you're just going to feel incredibly better. So you're going to have a better quality of life in addition to just saving your life.
Well, Doctor, I know there's somebody out there that if they have had a bad diagnosis and, they just didn't know what to do and they somehow found their way to this show and they listened and you gave them hope and they want to know more, can you tell them how they can get in contact with you? Because you do actually work with people. You are a holistic health consultant. People can actually call you, and you can actually help them put together a program, a dietary program that can actually help to save their life, regardless of what their condition is, correct?
Definitely. They can. I do help people put together diet plans and menu plans to help them reverse diseases or complement whatever, treatment they're doing, and coach them through the process, especially for people who this is new to. You often need that support. So people can reach me via my website at rubylathon.com. That's RubyLathon.com. Or they can reach me by phone at 202-709-7829. I'd be happy to share with you, my nutrition plans and what you can do. They can also get a lot of information on my website just to start there with healthy recipes and things. But I'd be happy to help folks who are ready and willing to make those changes.
And I would also add to that the Veggie Chest is something you can actually look at on YouTube. You just go to YouTube and punch in the Veggie Chest, and that's V-E-G-G-I-E Chest, C-H-E-S-T, and then you'll see different shows with Dr. Lathan, and you'll actually get the visual. Some people need to actually lay their eyes, on it and see, so this is how I do it. And so you're going to get, if you didn't have a blender, get one, a food processor, get one. Because they're going to be your best friend, and I guarantee you, Dr. Lathan can really, really help you make that change. If you're really ready, somebody heard this show today, and they're really ready, and I want to just encourage you to go back and listen to the archives, because if you're hearing this for the first time, we've done all kinds of shows with Dr. Lathan. She's got a powerful testimony. We didn't really go into it this time, but she actually healed herself of thyroid cancer. The doctor said, basically said, hey, we want to take your thyroid out. And she was like, I don't think so, because, again, She's a reader, okay? She's intelligent. She knows how to research. And that's why she's here now. Changed her whole life. Got healed within probably a year or less, correct, Doc?
Yeah, it was about 1 year. It was just over a year.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, everybody, I encourage you to get in contact with Dr. Lathan. You didn't hear this show by accident. So, again, she's all through the archives. We've talked about everything. So just scroll down wherever you see your name, just click, and I guarantee you that you will enjoy the information. Any parting words on heart disease prevention and for women, prevention and cure for women, Doctor, that we might not have covered? Anything else you'd like to add to that, or did we pretty much give them enough to get the show started?
I think folks have enough, and I just want people to take it seriously enough to make that change and to know that if you have these factors, it's not something to live with because they basically lead to early death and low quality of life. So if you have more than any of those risk factors, you need to do something about it. If you have two or more, you're high on the list is the point. So I want people to understand you're not supposed to just live with high blood pressure and live with diabetes and live with high cholesterol. You need to do something now about it. That is the message. And if you have been diagnosed with heart disease, you need to do something yesterday and get it together, like, right away. It's nothing to play with. And so that's the message I want people to understand, that this is not something to be taken lightly because we're losing too many people early, too many people, and that needs to stop.
And everybody, when you hear this information, don't look at it if you're not already on this path. If you're already on the path, I just want to say congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Spread the word. But if you're not already on this path, this holistic health path, don't look at this information as an option. Look at it as your only shot at life, okay? Because if you just look at it as an option, you know, like, okay, well, I know that if I ever get something, you know, I know that I can, you know, maybe go the holistic health route. No, look at this as your only shot at living. You have nothing to lose. You have nothing to lose but your disease. I mean, you really have nothing to lose but your disease, and that's enough, you know. So, you know, health is its own reward. So, you know, just want to say, give Dr. Lathan a call, check out the Veggie Chest, okay, and start this process of changing your life. Dr. Lathan, I just want to thank you again, sister, for, you know, all of the work that you've done. I mean, again, I look back at your bio and it's just like, wow, she's serious about this. It really changed your life. And as a result of your life being changed, you're helping to change other people's lives as well. And so I pray that God continues to open doors for you. And aside from, you got anything coming up in the next week or two that you want to make the people aware of? You got any workshops or anything coming up that, like maybe...
I
thought I saw something in Baltimore again. Is there something else going on?
Yeah, I had a lot of events this past month, but so people can just check my website and go to the events page to see what's coming up and sign up for my newsletter if you want to be notified via email about upcoming events and things. That would be the best way to get that information.
Okay. Well, Dr. Lathan, thank you again, sister. Again, always a pleasure. Again, wonderful, wonderful information, and I look forward to having you back on. Everybody, again, make sure you contact Dr. Lathan and go scroll through the archives and listen to all of her shows and tell a friend. Dr. Lathan, thank you. I'll be in touch.
Thank you. Great. Bye.
Talk to you later. That is Dr. Ruby Lathan, powerful, powerful sister with a powerful, powerful testimony, and holistic health changed her life. And as a result of it, she's helping to change other people's lives. And your life can be changed as well. But you know what? It's going to take effort. It really is. I mean, these shows are chock full of information. I mean, I know they're good, and that's not me bragging. It's not, I mean, it's the guests. They're bringing the powerful information, and I'm sitting here just chewing it just like you are. And it is good. And I recommend that you recommend these shows to other people that you know, because together we can heal this planet. But those that don't know don't have the benefit that you have. So I encourage you, I want to give encourage all of the followers of Health, Wealth, and Divine. It's almost 100 people that actually follow this show. I want to encourage you to share the show with somebody else and encourage them to join and become followers of the show. Because the more people that join and become followers of the show, then the more people get to hear shows like you, the one you just heard with Dr. Lathan. The more people get to hear Coy Dunstan. The more people get to hear Dr. Ted Watkins. The more people get to hear Orwahehi Metorayan Comet. The more people get to hear Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'un Nefer Amen the First. The more people get to hear Shechem Me'ab Neter. The more people get to hear Shechem Sa'anktakuna Nebu and others. The more people get to hear Queen Mother Mashtam Amen. I mean, the more people get to hear them if you tell other people about the show and share it. I put this show on for you. Just for you. Now, if you know somebody out there that needs to hear this information, then do it just for them. In the meantime, everybody, I want you to stay healthy, wealthy, and remember, you are divine. Who am I? My name is Juwanza. I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you?